All right, My Muscle Project, welcome back to another after show. We're in a little bit of a little bit of disaster mode right now.
It's a bombsite.
The studio is falling apart a little bit, but that's okay. We're not fazed. We just what happened was it was really hot. Or it is really hot, and then we smashed the aircon in here, and it goes really cold. And I think it has like messed with the stickiness or the glue, and so we've had some things kind of fall out. But it's all good.
I thought you said after our last podcast, vegans broke in and like took shit off the wall, had to mess up the
no, that's not possible.
Podcasting room.
It's not possible. We actually did. Actually, speaking of vegetarians and vegans, we did a really good episode with Leah Keith. You can't forget that name, Leah Keith, and she is the author of The Vegetarian Myth. I'm really excited for that one to come out. The same way we kept talking up the Stacey Sims podcast, which absolutely has gone bananas. You guys have loved that podcast. You guys will like the Vegetarian Myth podcast. Really cool. Really cool stuff. And you read her book ages ago, so I know you were super keen to get her on, so it was awesome to be able to speak with her.
Yeah, the Stacey Sims one has been so popular. It's kind of like Hazel Gale, I think. Mm. Obviously, like, tons of girls have been listening to it, but I've noticed so many. It's like one of the ones hates people, like, give it to somebody else. You have to listen to this.
Yeah, well, I think it's hard because women don't always have a voice in health and fitness, right? It's pretty, like, male-dominant. And I think, you know, the women, a lot of the women out there that are the front for women's health aren't always pushing the best message. 90% of the time on Instagram, they're not really pushing the best message. It's like calorie restriction, crazy challenges, like they're super skinny, they don't do strength training, they just do retarded like band and donkey kickbacks and stuff like that. And it can be frustrating, I think, because they set this weird bar of these weird standards that don't even make sense. Like, these people have stupid ideas about what health and fitness are. And plus, half the shit out there is fake anyway. You don't even know if that's how what they really do. Do they tell you that, oh man, I haven't had a carb in 10 years, but they eat donuts every day? We're going to get to more of those points. But where I was going with that is I actually saw a really, really good post on James Smith PT. We haven't talked about him for a while, but you know, he's still trucking along. He's doing really well. He's got like a really big following now, and he's got an app, I'm pretty sure. I think he moved back to England. He might be coming back to Australia. I think he's in Australia at the moment. But anyway, he put up a post, and it was just talking about, I think what I like about his stuff is, I think what a lot of people try and do on Instagram is they try and impress their peers. So maybe, for example, I'm just going to use arbitrary people, right? Say Brett Contreras puts up a post, and it's really informative, but maybe he's trying to impress like Eugene Teo. But what I like about James is he's just trying to lay it straight for the general population. He's not trying to get fancy with anything. He's just trying to take all the fanciness out of everything and just give the general population a really straight answer as to like, no, it's a calorie deficit. It's not this crazy thing. Anyway, what it was just put up this morning. F45 posted some kind of video about, as Chick's just talking about insulin, and insulin's the key to fat loss because, you know, insulin is moving glucose into the muscle, and during that process, when insulin's present, like, you can't mobilize fat. It's just retarded. And he's like, what are you talking about? It's a calorie deficit. That's the secret to fat loss. And it's true. Like, people will see this, right? F45, huge name. People, you attach that brand, you attach that level of authority to something that stupid, so many people believe it. And it's really dangerous. Like, Instagram information is really dangerous because people will go and do something like that. They'll go and pick those 5 retarded foods and think they're the only foods that they can eat for fat loss. Because I think that's what the video was. The video was like, 5 amazing foods for fat loss that control your blood sugar or whatever. Mm. And there's so much more to it than that. There's so much that goes into, man, it doesn't matter how your blood sugar goes if you take that food that they've studied in isolation on a fasted subject and you mix it in with protein, you mix it in with fiber, you mix it in with fats. It's like that food is obsolete now. Their blood sugar magic is gone.
I remember when we were in high school, we used to argue so much about what was high GI, medium GI, and low GI.
And what you realize is all the studies were done in faster populations with that food in isolation, which isn't reality.
And then I would slam it with like whole milk and shit, and it just didn't matter at all.
Exactly. So it's just silly stuff like that. And unfortunately, there's still stupid companies out there that are pushing that message. Now, I'm not saying, like, I think F45 franchisees, I think they're good people. I think they were, you know, some of them obviously just looking to make an investment, but I think a lot of people that are owner operators are really trying to change people's lives, and I think they're doing a fantastic job. Unfortunately, it's kind of like CrossFit. They're kind of at the mercy of the people up top putting out bad information. And you know, it's unfortunate when your company does that. I was speaking to Ev last night, and she was like, how do boards work? Like, what happens when you're the member of a board? And I was like, well, from my understanding, how a board works, a board of directors, is they weigh in. She's like, because what do they do day to day? Are they like, you know, downstairs leading the team? Are they having meetings? I'm like, well, essentially the board is a selection of whoever. Anyone can be on the board of any company. You don't have to like start as an employee in that company. The board can just bring people in. And part of that problem is that in crony capitalism is like just bringing their mates to all earn money together. And it's a bit twisted. But essentially what an ethical board would do is they bring in a bunch of different experts from different fields. They might be, okay, this person grew that company over here, or this person, you know, worked in this particular field for a while. He's got really good connections there. This person's made really good judgment on this particular stuff before. And so the board of a bank would come together and they would just vote and weigh in on major decisions that affect, you know, the health and the longevity of the company. And they also look over all the finances as well. Man, I have no fucking idea what I have no idea what point I was trying to make. But anyway, that's how boards work. Yeah, that was the discussion we were having. And I think, you know, for a lot of people, they don't really understand how boards work. Oh, that's where I was going with it. And the real reason that you have a board of people is because when a ship gets so big and the resources that you're carrying and the impact that you make is so large, you need to have some fail safes. You need to have some like protection around, you know, if CommBank makes a really big error, you know, and one person was in charge of that decision, I would say that's high risk. If one person say like, should we go left? Should we go right? You should have a panel of experts going, hey, we've reviewed everything. And from our expertise, our judgment, our years of experience, we're going left. And you go left and it's the right decision. It's what it is. It's just insurance for the company, basically, having a board. That's why CrossFit fucked up. They didn't have a board. Look what happened. We don't need social media. Goodbye. There wasn't a board voting on that going, hey, you know, Greg, that's like massive reach. Like, this is where it's going. You know, this is how we get influence and impact and all that stuff. He's like, yeah, cool. Yeah, fuck Instagram. Let's throw out Facebook. Okay, what about the CrossFit Games? Oh, you know, all the Netflix documentaries, the media team, like our long-term employees that help build the company. You know, I can just get rid of all of them. Yeah, I'm just having a bad day. So let's just chuck all of them out. And this is what happens. You get massive chaos within the company, and you get just this unraveling of something which was, you know, fortunately by this point CrossFit had already made the biggest impact it was going to make on the fitness industry, which is good. It had, you know, some people say it's good and bad, but I think, you know, the maximum amount of impact that CrossFit could have had, it had. And then it was kind of on the down, and then on its way down, I mean, they just kind of, you know, cut the cords. But at least I think that it would have been a shame if he did something like that, you know, in 2011, before it really reached its peak, say in like 13, 14. And now it's basically just like completely plateaued and bottomed out a little bit. And it's just kind of got its place in the market, its industry. And, you know, people that still love it, still want to watch the games, still watch the games and all that. But you can see that's a really good example of what it's like to not have a board. And one person that's just drunk and depressed and just a wild man can make decisions that can completely disrupt a huge company.
Well, I did notice the CEO of CrossFit, he stepped down like quite recently.
Okay.
So I'm sure it's probably like a pretty stressful place.
Yeah.
To work.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm not. It's been interesting to see what they do next, because like from what I've heard, the numbers for the open and stuff are like way way down.
Of course.
Like off the charts.
Of course.
And I think the affiliates are down as well.
Are you surprised?
Doesn't really seem like they care very much. So I'm not. Potentially, it's like they want to go in a different direction. They don't care that much about how big it is anymore. They're like, oh, we've done it. We've like grown crazy big. And now we just want to have this type of company that just does this thing.
Yeah.
But the weirdest thing is like, that's old people doing dumbbell rows with milk jugs.
Nice.
But then they still have the open. So it's confusing.
They killed it. There's nothing that'll kill a business faster than people not understanding what it's about.
Yeah.
You know, how clear was CrossFit in the beginning? It was like, we are anti-fitness. We're like garage, we're dirty, we're no machines, we're like, you know, we're the guy down the street who's got the garage and you can come train with him, and we throw down hard and we vomit, and like it's intensity, it's functional. Like, it was so clear what it was. You try and ask someone what CrossFit is now, it's chaos.
Yeah,
that's what it is. It's chaos. It's lost its message, it's lost its impact. And so unfortunately, it's just, yeah, it's been kind of sad to see it kind of fizzle out and die the way it has. But hey, it's what happens, you know. It's your greatest strength is your greatest weakness, right? So the thing that made Greg Glassman amazing and grew it to the company and the impact that it had is the same thing that destroyed it, right? So that's just how these things go. And then another thing as well, you know, they're doing a big push into China?
Yep.
I was talking to one of our members who is a Chinese native. He's been in the country in Australia for 5 years, and he listens to the podcast, and he was telling me that, you know, CrossFit did make a really big push into China, and it flopped. Mm. Like, it failed. Like, the messaging was just, like, way off for the Chinese market. It was, like, too hardcore. They're not like Americans, and they just kind of missed the mark, and, like, no one's interested in CrossFit in China. Like, they flopped hard there. So, interesting. I think they did well in Brazil.
They've absolutely destroyed it. It's absolutely massive in South America.
But I think they fucked up.
I think also what I heard was that because... the biggest thing that grew CrossFit's popularity is the media. Like, everyone watching, you know,
Netflix,
referring all the videos. But in China, they don't have any of that stuff.
Mm.
So, you know, back when they did, they didn't have Facebook. So, like, nobody knew who Rich Froning was.
Mm.
Didn't have Instagram. So, they weren't seeing any of the stuff. So, when I remember I spoke to that guy, ran the main China... He runs the Chinese comp. It's like the CrossFit sanctional there.
Yeah.
And they were like, man, no one's heard of any of those things. So, when people are like, CrossFit, they're just like, oh, what's that? I've, like, never heard of it. And they search for it, none of the media comes up.
Right. Fuck.
So, like, for him to get the Marmotsa Project, which is obviously, like, essential viewing for a human being, should be a human right, he has to do, like, the VPNs and shit to get access to our podcast in China.
Wow.
So, they just, like, don't have access to any of that stuff. So, without all of that, it's just, like, a workout on paper.
Yeah, yeah.
And then you're like, well, okay, not that exciting.
Yeah, it's not. Yeah, it's true. It's true. You want to do what your heroes do, right?
Yeah.
So, anyway. So, I've been reading James Clear's book. How I do books these days is I buy the audio version. If it even remotely tickles my fancy and I like it and I'm enjoying it, I buy the book.
Mm.
If I don't enjoy it from like chapter one, chapter two, like I'm getting rid of it. I'm not buying the book. There's nothing worse than buying a book and starting it and being like, I shouldn't have bought this book.
Yeah.
That's why I love... Cause it's a waste of resources as well, right? It's just a waste of like space and... I don't like people that have these giant bookshelves and you're like, oh, how's that book? Oh, no, I haven't really read any of those books. Like, man, that's just showing off. It's fucking stupid. So... I've got this little quote in here that I highlighted. I think it's interesting. So, the subtitle of this little section is Goals Restrict Your Happiness, which I thought was really interesting. And it's like he breaks down these four problems of goals. And then, so problem three is goals restrict your happiness. This is what I highlighted. The problem with a goals first mentality is that you're continually putting happiness off until the next milestone. He says, I slipped into this trap before. So many times I've lost count. For years, happiness was always something for my future self to enjoy. I promised myself that once I gained 20 pounds of muscle or after my business was featured in New York Times, then I could finally relax. Furthermore, goals create an either-or conflict. Either you have achieved your goal and are successful, or you fail and you are a disappointment. You mentally box yourself into a narrow version of happiness. Really good. Really, really good. I always fall into that trap of being like, man, once we're here, you know, I'll be happy. Mm. And I don't know how many fucking times I've done that. And it's like, you restrict yourself from being happy. And it's really about, I think, what it comes down to is finding stuff that you do day to day that you really enjoy. Because as it goes on about in the book, it's like the system that's going to achieve your goals. Goals are just kind of like these arbitrary kind of outcomes that happen at some point. But the system that you follow and the processes and the habits that you do should be enjoyable. It's almost the same way I view like CrossFit and exercise. A lot of these people are training for a goal that they feel like once they achieve, they'll be happy. Once I squat 200 kilos, I'll be happy. Once I get this marathon time, I'll be happy. Once I qualify for the CrossFit Games, I'll be happy. Once I do X in the open, I'll be happy. And the whole time along the way, they're not enjoying themselves. And that's not how you should treat exercise because here's the problem, right? What happens once you achieve that goal or you miss that goal? Then what do? You're guaranteed to be miserable because if you're happy and you achieve it, now what do? You're like, I don't have a goal to shoot for. I'm miserable. What's the point of training? I suffered all for this like very brief moment of happiness. And then if you lose and go there, you're like, I don't know if I can put myself through all that again for the next goal. So, but what people have to focus on is like, okay, you know you need to move, right? You know you need to do resistance training. You know you need to be healthy. You know you need to eat good food. So it's like, okay, from that, what ritual, daily ritual, habits, what system can I build that I actually enjoy doing? Now, don't get me wrong. There's always some element of it that you're not going to enjoy, right? You know, going hard on back squats is, I mean, some people get a kick out of it, but, you know, reach 8, 9, 10 reps of a 10 rep max, it's fucking hard. Like, it hurts, but there's a reward. The point is, some suffering is going to have to be a part of the process because that's where the reward lies. It can't just be easy. But you do have to enjoy it overall. You have to look forward to it, which is why I started playing basketball again. It's why you're exploring swimming and all this different stuff, right? Because you're trying to enjoy the process. So it's just a good message for people to do that. Now, I would say if you are doing all this and you're still not happy, and you find that you get stuck in like this cycle of like really negative self-talk, or you're quite depressed or stuff like that, there's a lot of things in that book you can kind of dive into your environment. But I would also encourage people to get a diagnosis as to, like, if you do have a mental health disorder. I would say a lot of them are probably overdiagnosed, but then some of them I'd say are underdiagnosed, especially men. They really try and grind it out and be like, nah, I'm good, I'm tough. Like, this is just part of life. Life's supposed to be hard. I'm not supposed to be happy here yet. And that's just part of life. It's not true. You can enjoy life in any sort of context, any circumstances. Look at, what's his name? Eliud Kipchoge.
Yep.
I know he fucking is like fastest man in the world, but he doesn't need things to be happy. If you saw the documentary, Breaking Two.
He doesn't break it.
No, he doesn't. Spoiler. Break it. He doesn't. The second time he does.
Later he does.
But his home is just like a little mud hut in Kenya. He doesn't need much to be happy. And he's kind of like a philosopher, this guy, and he talks about happiness. But I think a lot of people are waiting for this moment or waiting for this thing to be happy and accepting all the misery around them. And I would say that if you're in that place, it's worth at least finding out if you are potentially suffering from a mental health disorder, which, especially if you live in a major city, is very crowded, very isolated, a lot of people, but you feel very isolated. It's worth getting it checked out, especially if you're a guy. So if you go to Pilot, obviously they're helping us out at the moment, which I love. They're actually doing a free consult, which is pretty awesome. How can people get an opportunity to try this free consult?
So the code is just... And it is a confusing code.
It's annoying.
MMP Project.
No. MM Project.
MM Project.
Yeah. So capital M, capital M.
So 1P.
Capital M, Project. Project with a capital P.
All capitals.
Yeah. All capitals.
All capitals.
The whole
code. Whole thing, MM Project.
Right.
$20 off. So it is a very good deal. Yeah. So you can just find out, I guess, with no strings attached on it. But yeah, to what you said, I mean, it's not surprising. I think the thing that's so easy to forget is that striving for the goal is like the most enjoyable bit. And the day after you achieve it, there's no goal to strive for. So it's like kind of not surprising that that's like the lowest day.
Yeah.
You know, and it's just an easy
one.
It's
weird. People don't think about it, right? Yeah. It's like when people take steroids and they don't tell everyone about the fucking post-cycle depression that people go through. And you hear them talk about it all the time. The bitch shits. Your testosterone is through the floor, right? Your natural cycle is completely turned off. You're supposed to be doing post-cycle therapy. You're getting weak. Like, people never talk about what happens after the glory day, right? It's so important to talk about. So pilot.com.au, and you can go to just like book in sort of a consultation, run through the kind of sheet on your phone. You can just like text it in, fill out the questionnaire. And yeah, the code word is MM Project, one word, all capitals, and you're going to get a free consultation. So thank you, Pilot, for setting that up for us. Raph, tell us about this. tell us about this sneaky piece of information.
So interesting experience this week. And I reckon this is very commonplace, and I think it's going to be more and more commonplace. So this, I can't say obviously what brand it is, but it's like a major supplement brand that has a line of pretty much exclusively vegan supplements, like mostly.
Do they have non-vegan supplements?
Nah, don't think so.
So it's a fully vegan supplement.
Yeah, it's all plant-based, all plant-based proteins, and I think really good quality. And for a lot of people, the like non-dairy proteins actually do really well. Even people that aren't vegan, I've noticed, and I've used it a lot in the past as well. But sort of besides the point. Point is they have a like really well-known vegan influencer who I don't know if has a stake in the company, but it's like, you know how there's like a main ambassador often for a thing. Like, she's like the main ambassador. And what I overheard in a discussion is that she's not actually vegan anymore. It's been going on for like a year now. Like, she wants to be vegan, but she had some health problems and whatever. Can't actually be vegan. But it's like a crazy secret, and only like people on the back end know. Because she's like still having to promote the supplements, because, you know, it's a long-term thing.
She signed a contract.
Yeah, right? It's a really long-term thing, and they do like day in the life of food and all that stuff. It's like eating like regular food in between the filming. but like, it's a crazy secret. So like, the people that have the cameras know, and like some people now in the marketing know, but like nobody is allowed to know. But it just made me realize, man, it's so common. Like, so even I look at people and I'm like, oh, this guy's like a meat eater, and look at the results he gets. But sometimes you just forget, like, maybe that's not the case.
Mm.
Yeah, maybe that guy that 100%. Always posts about it is, you know, it's not actually the case. And what's crazy, I find, is how often that is the case. It's even like, say, with Arnold Schwarzenegger that was in the movie. Like, he was like, oh, part of the vegan movie. And I kind of presumed he was like vegan. But then I saw another video with him, and he's like, oh, nah, like, I'm, you know, I really focusing on vegetables, but, like, I'm not actually vegan.
No, of course you're not vegan. It's just eating more veggies.
And I think that stuff is constant. It's even, like, with other guys, like, oh, I'm the meat only, and then you speak to them, and they're like, oh, nah, like, I kind of stopped that a while ago, but, like, I still like to talk about my experiences, you know?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But it is a good reminder how, because people get wrapped up into selling a thing, they just can't go back on it.
Yeah.
And that's what it's, like, so easy to
forget. They don't want to look like a hypocrite. Right?
Yeah, you just can't. Like, you literally can't go back once there's a product tied to it.
It's tough.
So... It is so commonplace. That's why when people are like, oh, but look at this guy or look at this girl, like they're this, obviously works. Like, that's not an argument.
Yeah.
Because you have no idea what they actually are eating.
Who knows? You know, there's people in the Game Changers film, they might not be vegan.
Of course. Yeah. Of course, yeah. Or it's like a much shorter period of time than they let on.
Yeah.
It's like, I'm vegan. They never actually said like, oh, since this morning.
Yeah. Yeah, that's crazy. Well, you can't be vegan for that long because you get health issues most often. Okay, so... Last thing I want to talk about, did bring it up the other week, is my Whoop recovery score was like rock bottom, like terrible. Couldn't get it up past like 35%. And I was theorizing that the heat had a lot to do with it. So I got out all my cooling accessories in my bedroom. I got my bed jet now. We decided, okay, it's aircon time. It started really cooling the room. And it's not, to be honest, it's not that hot in my apartment, but I think it only takes a fraction of a couple of degrees to put your body temperature just over its normal range, and it just completely wrecks your sleep.
Well, I was loving this. I remember, I think you were talking about it when we were in Georgia, because it was hot, right, with Max. It was like, and it's so true, I think particularly for guys, it's like you can have like the perfect bed, right? Like $1 million bed, like insane, like the perfect like cushion, everything's right.
Yeah.
But if it's like 1 degree too hot, can't sleep. Totally fucked. Whereas you could be this in a shithole, like in some hostel in like Bulgaria, but as long as the temperature is fine, you like sleep like a baby. So like I think for guys in particular, it is the most important thing, I think, usually when it comes to sleep.
I'm going
to
pull out my sleep.
I would say even more than for me than darkness in the room. Like if it's not that dark in the room, but it's a really good temperature and the mattress is uncomfortable, I still just am out.
Yeah.
But as soon as it's hot, I'm up all night hot.
Yeah, it's been my worst sleep performance since I started Whoop, and my average performance was 74%. There was one night actually it recorded that, and I don't recall being awake that long, but it said I've been awake. I was like awake 2 hours out of my whole sleep. Wow. And it was a very light sleep just because, yeah, when you're hot, you just can't fall into that deep sleep. But anyway, it was really interesting. But it also made me realize that I have like accumulated so much sleep accessories because I was like, all right, cool. It's like summertime, pull out all the sleep accessories that, you know, when I counted them up, there's like basically 7 major super important sleep accessories that I use all the time. And I kind of think to myself, do we really need all these things? Because, you know, people used to sleep in, you know, really hot circumstances and stuff. I'm like, yeah, maybe they didn't sleep that well. Maybe that's why their life expectancy was really short. I'm like, if I want to prolong my health and my longevity and my productivity, I need to be maximizing every piece of science-backed sleep accessory under the sun. So I actually made a guide. I thought it'd be helpful for people. There's always like, everyone knows it needs to be cold. Everyone knows like you need a blackout curtains, all that shit. I didn't want to write a guide on that. What I wanted to write was like a guide with the actual sleep accessories to just go buy. Yeah, some of them are more a significant investment, but yeah, it can be good for people.
My favorite one in there is the one I've had. I think I've had it for about nearly 2 years now.
Yeah.
And Matt Fraser actually was the first person that told me about it. What is the light alarm clock? I don't know if you remember. Our first podcast with him. But so good. And I reckon the best thing about a light alarm clock is because it gets gradually lighter before waking you up, right?
Yeah.
So what I love is like, you know, when you wake up and it could be any time and you're like, I wonder if my alarm is like going to go off soon. Because then you're like in that discussion, like, do I like keep trying to sleep or I just like, oh, fuck it. Like,
commit to waking,
And sometimes you commit to waking and it's like 1 a.m. and that's like the worst feeling, right? Because you realize like, I think it's nearly up, but it's not. It's like, well, like, no, I have to go back to bed. But what I like about it is I just open my eyes and if it's pitch black still, I'm like, go back to bed.
Yeah.
And if I can see some light, I'm like, the alarm's going off within the next half an hour. Yeah. There's no point going back to bed. It's only going to make me feel worse. So that is like my favorite aspect of it. Is it doesn't matter if I'm waking up before the sun comes up or after or whatever. I can just like open my eyelids and I know if it's within half an hour of my alarm going off.
Mm. Yeah, you got kind of destroyed in the guide a little bit. Not personally.
Oh, no.
But if you read it, because it talks about air circulation under mattresses and I always see it. I'm like, Raph, you got to get like a proper bed frame.
Oh, because I sleep on the floor.
The circulation. Nah, dude, I'm telling you. Anyway, so if you guys want the guide, I wrote it up for you. It's themymustproject.com/free. We've got all our guides on there. And yeah, it's just a sleep guide there. So just grab that one. It's really cool. Okay. listener questions.
Okay.
What have we got this week?
First one, we have an anonymous asker. Hey, I have a question for the after show. Keen to hear your thoughts on opening up a CrossFit / functional gym for 24-hour access. Thanks, fellas.
Yeah, it's a good one. I think a lot of people... Look, before I even start on my thoughts on this, I think just in general, I think if you as a business owner are thinking about ways that you can keep up with different trends and adapt and pivot and change your model because you realize your growth has slowed or you're not potentially as profitable as you could be and you're looking at other options, you're exploring other options away from kind of what you were sticking to in the last few years, I think it's a good thing. I think that the best businesses always adapt and change to survive. The worst businesses hold on to their old ways of doing things and they don't adapt and things like the internet come along and they're like, oh no, we don't need the internet. Like, keep sending mail and then they just get crushed by their competitors. So yes, if you are thinking along these sorts of lines, if you're exploring different ways, if you're going, hey, those gyms do that and that's what they've done for a while, but maybe we can borrow a piece of what they do well, like 24-hour access, and somehow integrate it into our system, I think that's good thinking. I like that. Now, do I think it's going to be good for... Or what problems will it solve for CrossFit functional fitness spaces? So group fitness obviously needs to be coached. So there's some aspect of it. 24 hours allows people to come in whenever they want. So they're really not doing the classes, right? So it's basically giving people the option to train in the facility by themselves.
Yes.
That's what it's doing. 24 hours. Now, I come from the perspective of you want to help people the most. I think if you tell people that, not that they necessarily will, but hey, you can train after 8 p.m., I think it's better to not train.
Yeah.
So I think that's not a good thing. Where I think the middle ground should be on this, and we've talked about this before, is the middle ground needs to be something like you have the swipe access so you can come in at any time, but it's not 24 hours. That's what I think is helping people the most. It's giving people the option that maybe their roster changes or there's a shift change. Maybe they got the day off and they don't want to come to class and they want to just come do their own thing and they can use the facility and there are rules around it and how you clean up and, you know, equipment has to go away. That's all in place. But now they can come in whenever they want. And it's good because now, you know, you can have your gym open on weekends and you don't have to be there. People can access the gym, which is good. It gives them more value. But I don't know about the you know, extreme late night workouts.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's probably going to end up. But I do think that one of the best things about... I think what in particularly CrossFit showed is just having some sort of class or some sort of crew to train with or like some time. I do think it's the best for fitness. It's even like me, I like look out with like the swimming, right? It's like when I could swim, I had 24 access to swimming. I could go to the pool anytime. I never went.
Yeah.
But when there was like a class on, I went and swam like 5 times as much as I ever would on my own, right? And that is the difference between like doing a class or having a trainer or doing something with other people and doing it on your own. And it, like... I think it's good to be able to do stuff on your own. I obviously still do a lot of my fitness on my own, but I don't love the idea of like, oh, everyone just comes in, do whatever you want. Like, it's the best. People can arrange their schedules. It's not the most convenient in the world, but it's, man, you get the best results. You get the best results when you can find either someone to train with, a coach there, or as many of those factors you can put together.
Yeah, it's not the solution to getting best results. It's a good way to add a bit more marketing to your gym, like, hey, we do 24 hours. And it's just a good way to add a little bit more revenue on for people like you, people like me that are going to use the main service, but every now and then we might want to not use the service. And it's good because you can, like I said, you can open on weekends. You don't need a staff member to be there. So those are sort of the main benefits for them. I'm not fully against it. And I think it's good because it's not that expensive to set up, right?
No, not really.
Cameras, swipe access.
Not a huge insurance deal, really.
That's about it. The only thing would just be like making sure that the cleaning and the rules are like pretty strict around it.
Okay, second question. After experimenting with nasal breathing, what
benefits...
Do they
want to remain anonymous?
No, good question. Josh Whiteif. After experimenting with nasal breathing, what benefits have you experienced? And do you believe that these benefits are caused directly by nasal breathing? Or could they have possibly just been an aerobic response? Or response to cardiovascular training. He goes on. Love the content, boys. Better and better every week.
Yeah, I think that... good question. I think that question is making the assumption that we're doing nasal breathing in our training. Now, I have taken most of Patrick's principles and I've just applied them to all the times that I'm not training. Yeah. I do actually think about it when I'm doing my training now. I don't do a lot of... All my aerobic training now is just basketball. So I'm doing that 3 or 4 times a week. So, and honestly, you're not really thinking about if you're breathing through your mouth or your nose when you're dribbling or...
Don't you put the tape on your mouth?
Yeah, I do. Silent player and very sneaky. But I do think about it when I'm doing reps. And I do actually really... What I've noticed is the... So, if say I'm doing a set of split squats, for example. If I force myself to breathe through my nose through the entire set of, say, 12 reps, and it starts to get really hard at the end, and it's like burning and stuff, I think it does bring a certain level of calmness that you don't get if you start breathing from your mouth from the beginning. There is that panic response. There is that heavy airflow, like sucking down wind super hard, you know, stressful response that you get when you have your mouth open, you're breathing through your mouth during your set. So I like to try and keep my mouth closed through all my training now. When it's my bodybuilding training, right? So it's set, you know, train, rest, set, rest, that sort of thing. So,
man, I think nasal breathing is the shit, and I think it's so good. There's different ways you can use it. I think if you go back and listen to the podcast with Patrick,
2 weeks ago,
there are special benefits to the nasal breathing. One is that you tend to, and he's done the studies on it, you tend to access more of your lungs. So just like literally, you fill up more amounts of liters into your lung capacity when you do it, and also. Just breathing through the nose, and they've tested this as well, increases blood. I think it's like vasodilation. So basically, you're getting more blood to the heart and to the muscles when you start breathing through your nose. So there's literally a performance benefit straight away when you're doing it, and a long term benefit as well. So the way I'll often use it now is I'll like use it as a pacing mechanism. So I'll be like, hey, I'm gonna like go on this run, and I'm gonna run close to as fast as I can without opening my mouth, and that just like is a really good way to pace. Well, literally for intervals, I'll be like, cool, this long nose only, this long in through the nose, out through the mouth, and then all hell, like in through the arsehole, out through the arsehole, whatever, right? And it's a really, really good way to pace. And you can use it with clients as well. I'll do the same with clients. Cool, like 3 minutes, nose only, and then you can go in through the nose, out through the mouth.
Yeah.
And they see a huge benefit in it. So I couldn't encourage people to do it more. And it actually reminded me of, if you watch Breaking 2 with Eli Kipchoge, he's talking about when he goes running with like these other people. And he goes, I know they're a bad runner, because I'm hearing them go, right. Soon in the run. And he's breathing through his nose. His mouth is dead closed.
Yeah.
So like
dead closed.
Dead closed. Yep. What you're hearing is like he's hearing other people breathe through the mouth and he knows they suck.
Dead closed.
Dead closed, bro. Like a dead person. Their mouth is closed.
Maybe. I think it's you should definitely nasal breathe as much as you can. I don't think you're not really supposed to breathe through your mouth at all, really. So as much as you can. And I think it's also really good for prep. So when you're about to do some sort of hard aerobic activity, so when I'm prepping for basketball, I'll do some of the nasal restriction stuff and it just helps to open up the airways. Like Raf said, I think you get 5% more vasodilation. Yep. So that just helps your body just prep to move more blood more quickly around the body. And then when I get into the game, I'm not thinking about it, but I know I've done some good prep before. It's kind of just like aerobic priming.
So good for priming.
Yeah.
Okay. Last question. This is from Troy Rossi, who's asked a few questions on the show. And this is a long question, so prepare yourself. I'm no hardcore John Wellborn red meat-eating savage, but I want to ask if you think the rise of these popular weight loss challenges and dumbed-down F45-type classes aimed at middle-aged men and insecure teenage girls can be blamed for the rise in this popular vegan movement. Anyone that's been vaccinated or wasn't homeschooled by a mummy blogger would be educated enough to understand that any crash diet or consistently under-eating isn't a healthy way to live. Just like paleo was the extreme diet of choice for CrossFit, this plant-based movement seems to have attached itself to this new wave of fitness and is riding high at the moment. But with the next fitness fad bound to be around the corner, do you see this movement slowly becoming weaker and withering away to look literally like members' after photo from their recent 8-week challenge?
I feel like that question had like lots of questions within it.
Yep.
But if you take the main question from that, I think it was just trying to take a stab at multiple things there. I agree with a lot of that stuff. But the whole thing of like, will this vegan plant-based movement, will it die down? The difference, and this is something that the Mind Pump guys make very apparent, and it's true, the difference between this and all the other diets that have come up in the past is they do attach the ethical debate to it. You're not like more ethical. It's not like an ethical choice to go keto. You know what I mean? It's
no, but
like
carbs are bad people.
yeah, but like
you're a better person avoiding carbs.
Whereas like, you know, if you eat plant-based,
Hitler,
if you're a vegan.
Hitler had a high carb diet. It's a fact.
We're getting in the weeds here. if you go plant based, you're doing something moral now. You're not just, you know, people will say I'm being healthy, but you know, I'm saving the planet and like I'm not killing animals. So I'm like, I'm better than you.
Yeah.
And that gives it way more staying power than keto, because with keto, you're just like, oh, I'm just trying to eat more fat to burn more fat to be leaner. And then it doesn't really work. You're like, ah, oh, whatever. But with plant-based, you know, people, whatever result they get, they kind of put up with a negative result, because, you know, with most diets, you get a negative result. They put up with a negative result. Maybe their body composition gets worse. Maybe they get a bit tired. Maybe they get crashes. Maybe they start showing up with some health issues. But what keeps them around longer than other things is like, I'm doing good for the planet because I'm not eating animals and I'm not harming animals and I'm not being cruel, which is not true. Okay, it's a false, it's a myth. Okay, just because you don't eat an animal doesn't mean the process of the food that gets into your plate, into your mouth and digestive system, didn't harm an animal. It's just not true. We get into it with Leah Keith, but I'll just give you a quick rundown of it now. The worst thing you can do for the planet, the worst thing is agriculture, right? Is monocrops. Let me explain. So the earth is made up of forests and grasslands naturally, right? And these plants, these ecosystems that exist in this land are like the lungs of the earth, right? So they recycle carbon they absorb carbon and they push out oxygen, right? For us to breathe. And these are the lungs of the earth. So when we destroy these fields, or when we destroy these natural grasslands and environments, take out all the animals' homes that you completely annihilate, right? So if you go through and you clear out a field, you're just wiping out their home, right? So forget about that. Let's just say you manage to get every bug and every insect and every living thing safely into the next paddock, right? Before you completely wiped out their homes, you're like, good luck, go find something else. You are destroying the plants that breathe, that are helping the planet stay alive. They're helping to create the atmosphere that you're breathing that's keeping you alive, right? The more and more we do this, the more land that we wipe out, the 6 inches of soil that's the healthiest thing that regenerates these plants, that helps breed new life and food and stuff for everyone. When you put a monocrop in that 6 inches of soil and you kind of, I think it's called the topsoil, when you turn over that topsoil year after year after year, you get less nutrients in the soil. And they've researched this, right? Some of the soil in those monocrops have like 5 nutrients. They're supposed to have like tens of thousands of nutrients. So you completely wipe out the soil's diversity, and therefore the nutrients and stuff that are going into these crops are like very low, which is why like wheat and corn and soy and all this stuff, they're like very low nutrients. They basically have 0 nutrients in them. They're just calories, right? They're just energy dense. And so the more and more of this farmland and that we're taking, the more of the planet that we're harming and destroying. We're wiping out tons of insects that are obviously important to the ecosystem and the cycle of life. We're wiping out tons of bigger animals that are, you know, have homes in these fields. And, you know, when you're thinking of this, you're thinking of one farm. What you need to realize is there's like 50 football fields a day are being wiped out in the Amazon alone to make room for monocrops. That is absolutely insane. So we're wiping out not only the plants that recycle the earth's energy, we're wiping out all the water that's involved to grow these monocrops. We're wiping out all the animals that are involved to make them because you want your fucking almond milk. I'm sorry, but your almonds cost so much land, so much water, so many homes for animals that you're actually doing more harm than good. You have good intentions. That's the thing. These people have good intentions. I don't blame them for that. They just don't have the proper education and the knowledge. And simply not eating animals is not a solution to helping them. It's just not. The solution lies in changing how we do farming and agriculture. Okay. Rant over. Was that a good summary?
I think so. Completely forgot what question we were answering.
I don't know. No, I think we'll...
We were talking about the vegan movement, which is true. Yeah, and you were saying...
I just got triggered.
the podcast we release on it will be really good. But yeah, I think you're right. The moral aspect to it will make it stick around for longer.
Mm. Oh, that's what we're answering. Yeah.
But I think more than a lot of other fad diets, the sustainability of it could be lower than a lot of other diets. Like low carb or some sort of diet like that, right? Like a low fat diet, you can do for a very long time.
There are more options.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's not hard, and you're probably not going to get any crazy deficiencies. Whereas you could very often say the deficiencies in this could be even worse. So I think the come down will be pretty hard on it, but it's probably not going anywhere for a while.
Yeah. No, it's sticking around this one for a while. When James Cameron gets involved in a movie, when he can sink hundreds of millions of dollars into a vegan's Beyond Meat company and he can profit off of it, fucking oath he'll keep making movies on it.
People wonder if like propaganda works. It works.
It's working
it
right now.
It works very well.
I don't know how
well.
Many people have watched Game Changers, taken a screenshot of them watching the movie and going, thinking about going vegan. I'm like, wow, he's got everyone.
he's got
them all.
It's crazy convincing.
Yeah, he's got them all.
Final question, and it's quick. Are you guys doing the open? Asked by DSAS26.
Okay, so no, we're not doing the open. Let me tell you the moment that happened to me this week where I was like, this is exactly why I don't do the open. Because... let me just preface this with, if you want to do the open, fucking do the open. Like, more power to you. This is just me expressing why I'm not doing the open. I'm not saying the open's bad. I just don't want to do the open. So I was watching Starry, Coach Jody, and Neil go through it, right? And they're hurting. They're in the hurt locker, right? They are fucking dying. It's this 20-minute crazy workout with, like, I don't know, box jumps and shit. My knees are just hurting watching it. And in this moment, I was watching them suffer, and I just thought to myself, this is a sport. This is a sport. This is not an exercise program for the general population. And that is where the whole thing got fucked up, is people started to think, in order to get hectic results, feel good, lose body fat, gain muscle, I have to suffer this much. That is a myth. That is false. You do not have to suffer for this long and suffer that much in order to just be healthy and look good and feel good and move well. It's just not necessary. And that's where we got lost along the way, is we made the sport an exercise program. And I think that's where the whole thing got fucked up. Because I was looking at them suffer and I was like, yeah, these guys are in great shape, but they're not in any better shape than I am. And I haven't even suffered close to this amount. Like, I maybe do 4 or 5 sprints up the basketball court, getting back on defense, and my hands are on my knees and I'm hurting. But to the level that they're suffering right now, not even close. Forget about it. Can I? Yeah, of course I can. But should I and do I need to? Absolutely not. And so I think that people need to realize that when they're participating in the open, you are participating in a competitive sport. This is not, oh, I kind of do it as an exercise program and now I'm going to do the open. That is not what the open is. Okay, the open is a sport. In the sport, you get injuries, you get surgeries, you get pain, you get suffering, you get sacrifice. Those are all things that are associated with a sport, not with an exercise program. Okay. Do you want to?
Yeah, I would say that the problem with it is just that it's 5 weeks. And that's, like, I feel like the biggest issue.
Yeah.
If it was just like one, it'd be like, sweet. Like, it's like, you know, I love like fitness challenges and stuff. But in general, it's like one weekend. You're like, oh, I'm going to do this thing. It's like this. And it's like 1 week. And I'm going to commit that time to it and put a big effort into it. And it's awesome because I think any like really hard challenge is great for you. But committing to something that goes on like never ending for 5 weeks, this year, 10 weeks of the year, is just like too much of a commitment. And you see that with a lot of people, like they start to like not enjoy it towards the end because they're like, oh man, like when is this thing ending? Like I'm still broken from the first week and it's week 4. And that's like kind of the, probably I would say the most annoying aspect of it. But if it was one, I would probably give it a go. Cause you see how you go, smash yourself and then you can just like move on with your life. But this one, you're like, man, it's 10 weeks of the year. It's like you dedicate like a quarter of the year to it.
Yeah.
It's just so much, like quarter of the year.
It's a sport.
You were like, dead on your weekend. Dead.
Sacrifice.
Dead. And thinking about it for a lot of your weeks. So, it's just, yeah, it's how much mental energy can you put towards it? And I've had that conversation with a few of our members during this open in particular. They're like, yeah, like really, really enjoyed it. But like, I think doing this open is just going to lead to more unhappiness for me than not doing it.
Yes.
I was like, yeah, probably a pretty good idea not to do it then.
And the same conversation we had at the start of this episode, right? Which was happiness and goals, right? If you're setting goals like the open to be happy and you're doing all this suffering towards it, you're never going to be happy, all right? So, we explained that at the start. If you want to review it, rewind. Okay, we'll dive into the movie.
Okay, Netflix documentary. League of Legends Origins.
Yeah.
Fans and experts and creators of the League of Legends detail the game's rise from free demo to global sports titan.
Yep. So, I think we've reviewed something on the show before about League of Legends. I feel like it's not the first documentary I've watched in it, but this has definitely been the best documentary I've watched because... League of Legends is basically like one of the biggest video games of all time. I know Fortnite is the biggest one right now, but League of Legends held the crown for a long time. And what's cool about it is it's really just a business documentary, but it's a video game, so it's got the cult following with it. And it's just kind of really interesting to hear how the founders kind of identified a problem in the video gaming world as gamers themselves and I'll be the first one to put my hand up and say I was a fucking mad gamer back in the day.
Did you play League of Legends?
No, I wasn't around back in the day. Yeah. This is how I got out of my game, my gaming addiction. So I was like mad Call of Duty, Halo fan. Like used to play nonstop in high school. Year 11, year 12 came around. So then I shifted my video game addiction. So I put down the controller. It was a sad day. But then I became a like online fan. So like how esports are now where people just like watch it and they just play recreationally. That's what I did. But esports wasn't really a thing there. So I just used to watch the popular gamers on YouTube. I'd be like, cool, I'm just going to watch them for an hour. And this is like before Twitch and before streaming services and stuff. And what I would do is I'd just watch like the Korean guys play like StarCraft or something just on the computer. And what I realized is I was participating in like the very first but unofficial kind of esports spectator realm. You know, back in like 2008, 2009, there wasn't, because now they've created platforms and like channels where people can tune in and just watch the sports live, right? And there's like tournaments and events and stuff. There were like a little bit of that back then, but like there wasn't really the money in it. So I used to spectate. I used to be like, oh, like this weekend, what's on? It's like this event's on. I used to watch it. But, you know, me and like 500 people, you know, not many people at all. And this has been really cool because you get to watch the rise of basically these really good entrepreneurs that built this company and just how they kind of adapted and all the problems that they had along the way. And it just obviously makes for a really cool story because it's tied into the rise of esports. Which is cool.
It's just, it's something that's hard, I think, to, it's one of those things that it's like harder to get your head around, you right? Because it's just different.
It's
like
so
you're
different.
So used to, if someone was like, oh man, I'm like watching like the NFL this weekend, you'd be like, bro, that's so weird. Why don't you just go out and play?
Yeah.
You'd be like, oh, of course you are. It's like the most fun thing to do on the weekend.
Yeah.
But somehow with esports, you still, I think, if you haven't been through it yourself, you still have that reaction. You're like, surely it's more fun just to play it than watch it.
Yeah.
Because you can just play. But it's just, I mean, it's the same.
It's the same. No, it's the same. And I think what was cool, there was one part in the documentary where they talked about what it was like to be a pro gamer. And they like interviewing all these different pro gamers and former pro gamers. And it was really interesting because he was like, you know, in regular sports, you know, these people, they have time to be built up and to kind of become famous and learn how to deal with fame. And playing sports is a very social thing. So these people are really good socially. He's like, but these pro gamers, they're all like very anti-social.
You're saying that the pro gamers aren't good socially?
It turns out they're not.
This must be a controversial documentary.
Turns out they're not. They're not actually good with people. It's funny because they start going into it and then the esports commentators start going like, these guys don't understand like how important it is to like show up to media conferences, show up to these like live events and put on good interviews and have really good interviews. Like, they filmed one clip on interview and it was so bad. The guy answered with, oh, that was funny. No, it was like so bad. Like, I thought about suicide. And the commentator just looked, the interviewer just looks at the camera like, cut, cut, cut. Like, it was such a bad answer, but it was such a nerd answer to a question where they have like that really dry, really dark sense of humor. Yeah. And it's just like,
you could just honed it only over chat.
Exactly.
And message.
Yeah, exactly. Right. And it's funny because they were explaining, you know, it's like crazy sacrifice pro gaming because how it's different. One of them explained it was like, okay, if you're a professional like basketball player, or NFL player, you go out and you can practice fucking hard, but you have physical limitations. Yeah. There's like a limit to how much you can practice because it's so physical. You know, if you do an 8-hour day, you're like, fuck, go home, sleep, eat, recover, get up the next day, but you're capped. It's like, we're not really capped. Mm. And he goes, and you give up so much because you can't have a social life. You can't really have many friends outside of like your team. And like, you only have time for eating and drinking and maybe a little bit of fitness. But he's like, you need to put in like, he was saying like 14 to 16 hour days. That's like, doesn't give you much time for anything. Because he's like, you're not limited by physical. Yeah. So you can just play nonstop and you need to be at that level. And he's like, so you give up so much and the pressure is crazy because if you're like not playing all day every day, he's like, someone else is. Yeah. And at least in the NFL you can be like, oh yeah, played, but like at least everyone's sleeping and resting now.
Yeah.
But in esports, he's like, it's nonstop. It's why Koreans, they end up dead at these internet cafes because they lose track of time. They go fucking 72 hours without food and water.
That's the way they wanted to go. Let's be frank.
That is the way they wanted to go. And so yeah, it's just crazy. Like, it's just a really interesting sport. I think it's a fascinating documentary. Look, for anyone that's doesn't even care about video games, just give it a chance. And like, just, it's a really interesting side of the world.
Yeah. Crazy. But yeah, like you said, it is so interesting. Like, the sport that you get into has a huge dictate on like how happy you're going to be.
Yeah.
Because like that's the spot I can see. It's like no matter how much money you're making, if you're still playing 15 hours of video games a day.
Miserable.
You're still playing 15 hours of video games a day. It doesn't matter how much money you make.
That's what he said.
So it's like...
It's like you're stuck.
Well, to me, that looks not that fun. Yeah. Because, you know, anytime I look at a screen 15 hours a day, it's not a great day for me.
Yeah.
Let's be honest.
Yeah. I think they like it. It's enjoyed because they're competitive, but it's still just their job to be on it nonstop. And there's probably, yeah, like a lot of anxiety associated with just playing all the time. So, really good. I'm going to give it a 4 out of 5. The documentary was done extremely well. It was good because they got everyone involved in it. You know those documentaries where it's like on a budget and it's like, oh yeah, the founder was like this, but they don't interview the founders. Yes. They had everyone in that fucking documentary. So, really cool. Worth a watch. League of Legends Origins. All right, guys. That's it for this after show. Thank you so much for tuning in. We talked about Whoop. We talked about Pilot. All the offers, all the deals in the description of this episode, or if you just want to go right now, themindmuscleproject.com/partners. And then I did talk about that sleep guide. If you guys want to check out the sleep accessory guide that I put together, themindmuscleproject.com/free. And that's where all our guides are. So check that out. Guys, thank you so much for listening. We'll speak to you next week.